Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the Bald-Faced Truth.
NBA will meet tomorrow. Adam Silver will meet with his board of governors, the owners, or the representatives of the owners in some cases. They'll talk about their season. The NFL is kind of cruising along. The timing of this coronavirus thing benefited the NFL a little bit in that they didn't have to, at least initially, cancel any games. College football is making plans. The NHL has already decided if they come back, it's playoffs only. Major League Baseball, where are they? I want to go to Maury Brown. Writes for Forbes, Baseball Writers Association of America member. Joining us now, Maury Brown, thank you for making time. I appreciate you. Let's start with that question. What happens with the owners and the players? Where are they, and what do you expect to happen?
Well, John, they went through a lengthy process looking at the health and safety aspect of it. It was about a 70-page document. They seem to be, you know, tweaking that a little bit, but there seems to be movement on that, and they're going to reach that. But the economics of the whole deal are the thing where they're at loggerheads right now. The players really want to see prorated pay, their normal pay for a shortened 82-game season or potentially longer. The owners are looking for something more. They believe that since they're taking cuts in their executive staff, they believe the players should try and saddle some of that burden. And that's really tricky because the way that they offered it initially was that they were going to leak out a revenue sharing plan or a salary cap. That, of course, fell on deaf ears immediately, so they didn't even attempt to submit that. They went with a deal that basically is going to cut salaries as little as 10% for players that make under $1 million and could be significant, like 75% for guys like Mike Trout or Bryce Harper. And the players are pretty much dead set against that. So here we are. They're going to look to submit their own proposal next week, but they're running out of time, John. I mean, they really need to try and come to some kind of agreement on this thing at the end of this week or early next week at the latest.
I've heard people have empathy for the players, and I've heard others say the players are blowing it. They don't appear to be unified. I've heard other people criticize the owners and say, look, they're looking to take advantage of this opportunity. Maury, how do you see it?
Well, I kind of lean on the side of the players being on the right on this thing. You know, for one thing, you know, the economics of this thing is going to absolutely crater not just this year but next year. And you're already looking at a situation to where salaries are going to be impacted pretty intensely next year. Players also have short, you know, shelf lives. Careers are not the same. A player can go out and get injured right away. It's unlike somebody that's working on the front line at a grocery store, and God bless those people, right? If you get sick, you could potentially come back, and you're probably unaffected. Athletes are in a different situation. So I really think that, coupled with the idea that for years now, John, and I mean, we're talking decades now, the owners have made incredible profits. And due to that, they have not cut the players in on that. The widening of the amount of money that the owners have taken in and the amount of money that the players have taken in has widened. Now, look, I'm not sorry for either one of them. They're both rich. But, look, it's hard for me to not sit there and go in a situation where they see out into the future and know that they're going to get dinged again, that they don't want to hold on to the agreements that they already have in place.
Maury Brown, Forbes, with us on Tuesday. The A's announced they would furlough scouts and some team employees. They issued pay cuts to some other employees. They became one of the first teams to eliminate the $400 a week stipend for their minor league players. They're also behind on their rent. That franchise is a mess. What do you make of how John Fisher's running the A's?
Well, you're hitting the nail on the head. It's a mess. I just don't understand it, John. I really don't. The Florida or the Miami Marlins, right, that Derek Jeter purchased, is the only team that ran in the red last year, okay, they're able to go ahead and make their obligation to these minor league players, which is the right thing to do. And so I really don't understand it for the longest time. Now, whether he looks like he's going to sell or not, I don't know. I mean, that's been a rumor for a long time. By the same token, there's a lot of value in keeping the club. I mean, it continues to gain value, even in the midst of all of this, in the shoddy running of the club, in the situation with not being able to reach a deal on their ballpark, all of these things, the value of that club continues to go up. So I don't see or have not heard of anything right now of him unloading it. But, look, it just makes him look bad when you see these other clubs doing a situation where they're taking care of their players.
He is the youngest of three heirs to the Gap. The Gap stores. A lot of the Fisher family wealth came from the Gap stores, and so I was interested as I read this morning that the Gap stopped paying rent in their 2,800 retail stores in April. They furloughed employees. They cut executive pay. It's almost like he's trying to run the baseball program like they run the Gap.
Yeah, and it's hard to really sit there and go, let's just stop giving $400 stipends to the players, which, by the way, under their contracts, they're not free agents yet. And so the difficult thing about this whole thing is that, his net worth is $2.1 billion. It's just very difficult to look at this and go, the baseball situation should be run the same as the Gap. I understand that in mall life right now is, of course, hit. It was already on the decline, and now it has really hit hard due to the pandemic. But no, you shouldn't be running it this way. Baseball is on the cusp of not only the coming back to life at some point to bring fans back, but remember, they've already inked a television deal with Fox that sees a 38% increase in their revenues in 2021, at the end of 2021 when that kicks in. ESPN and Turner are in the midst of negotiating as well. So that's new revenues that are going to be coming in. It's just, I think, short-sighted. It really is. It's nixing their development stream. And if there was ever a club that needed to develop talent because they won't spend in free agency, it's the A's.
Maury Brown with us, Baseball Writers Association of America member. You can also read him in Forbes magazine or USA Today. Maury, you know Oregon. You live here. You've seen the Diamond Project. Is it possible that the Diamond Project could find an angle with the A's or maybe expansion, or is it just too distracted right now for any of that talk to take place?
Well, it's certainly a back burner issue right now, John. They really have to focus on this. They're focusing on an agreement with the minor leagues as well, which could see 42 clubs shut down. But look, in the middle of this, it does provide a relief valve for them in the future. In the 90s, when I talked to former Commissioner Babe Benson, he said that expansion into Florida was done to collect expansion fees, which offset their collusion payments that they had to make to the players when they screwed up in the 80s. So here's an opportunity to gather not $1 billion, but $2 billion if you expand by two, and that provides a relief valve on some of this stuff. That would offset some of these revenue losses. Now, look, is it something that's going to happen right away? Absolutely not. They got to get this stuff out of the way, and they're going to be focused on this not just for 2020, but into next year and potentially, years after. But it is an opportunity for expansion to move faster. So I see the expansion route as being more beneficial to the league and to the Diamond Project, where the A's would have to be something that would be catastrophic. We still don't know what's going on with their ballpark plans, but, I think the expansion route looks better for them right now.
Maury, yesterday on the show, I had Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. He said that he believes the Mariners would try to oppose Portland as a Major League Baseball city. Would it just then be a 29-1 vote and it happens anyway, or can the Mariners really make waves if Portland is a player for expansion?
Yeah, Ryan's right. John Stanton, the owner of the Mariners, I've talked to him, and they dance around it very nicely, right, and say, well, we want to do whatever's best for baseball. But let's be honest, it'll affect them. Some fans, right, will drive up there, but it affects them as part of television. Strangely, the A's and the Giants would have a problem with this as well because their television territory has continued to creep north. They're into Salem. I expected much, not too much further until you're into something like, Woodburn or something like that. So trying to carve out a TV deal in the midst of all this would be difficult. So they're not going to be happy with it. But I get back to that $1 billion or $2 million because you're going to take two expansion teams at the same time. That's going to be an overriding thing. You know, you're going to be able to go, look, guys, we get it that you're upset about that. We'll figure out some way to placate you, or we'll figure something out. But we need this money because everybody, all 30 of us, are taking a hit. So I think that, once again, this situation actually plays out to, you know, the Portland Diamond Project's benefit in terms of getting a TV deal and potentially having a vote in the future.
I've been watching sort of, you know, the Diamond Project operate. I'm impressed with what they've done. I think it's the most organized, efficient group to this point. But I still think baseball has to want to put a team here. Maury, is this going to happen in our lifetime? Or, you know, I get a lot of people ask me, and they just say, is it going to happen? Is it going to happen? I feel like I'm selling hope a little bit.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that. I'm about ready to publish in like 5 minutes here a story. You know, the due diligence agreement on the T2 site expired yesterday. And so based upon that, I talked to Craig Cheek yesterday, and he said, look, they're still very much active and involved in this thing. It's still, you know, they're still focused on that. The way the pandemic has affected mall life could influence whether they look at Lloyd Center in the future or whatnot. But look, you know, I don't know if it's going to be. I hope it's in my lifetime. You know, hopefully I don't get hit by a truck or anything between now and then. But, you know, it is one of those things where I just don't see it in the immediate future, John. It's just there's so much that this whole thing has put on hold while they try and address the labor agreement between the players, the thing with the minors, and then try and get their financial house straightened out before they can start to seriously look at that. But look, Portland's going to be in that conversation. There's just no way. They're going to continue to work on it. They're doing the transportation and traffic study, which has been slowed down by all of this stuff where everybody's teleworking and everything. That stuff is still on track. Craig said, I think, something like 60 days that they would look to try and get that potentially delivered. So that's still on the table. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a positive thing. They continue to motor along. But once again, I just don't see it happening anytime within the next two or three, maybe five, hopefully no more than 10 years.
I know the leagues have spent a lot of time rubbernecking, kind of saying, okay, what's the NBA going to do? What's college? What's the SEC doing? What's Pac-12 doing? Major League Baseball, are they looking at the NBA? Because I think the NBA tomorrow is going to take a big step forward toward what their plan is going to be. Does that make Major League Baseball sit up?
Well, I think that it does. I mean, look, everybody wants to be, when I say everybody, out of the big four or the big three, you would want to have, baseball wants to be first. You know, it's the summer. They really want to make that sort of thing happen. And I get where the NBA is at and the NHL. I think a lot of people look strangely to NASCAR and what happened with their ratings, which have been through the roof for their first races when they come back. There is a huge appetite for live sports. I mean, look, I'm excited about watching, you know, The Last Dance or whatever classic games are on repeat, but I can only handle so much of that. Fans are in the same boat, and I think that they're going to want this. So, yeah, they're looking at that. I mean, they're on their own timeline. They've got to get something done next week. If they don't, it will make them all look really bad. So there's a lot of pressure on both the owners and the players right now to try and make something happen. And I think that there's actually, you know, as craziest things sound right now and as acrimonious as it is, there's still this positive feeling that somehow it's all going to come together. You know, it would cascade into the next labor deal, which ends at the end of next year. I think that they're going to make it happen.
Maury Brown, Forbes. Maury, thank you. Great stuff.
John, thanks so much. You have yourself a great day and be safe out there.
You too, Maury. There's Maury Brown. You can read him on Forbes. Follow him on Twitter as well. If you're looking for Maury, he is not difficult to find, at BizBallMurray. All right. Elijah Molden getting some love nationally. We'll talk about the University of Washington defensive back, kid from the state of Oregon. We'll talk college football next. We're in the 2 o'clock hour. I like to call it the happy hour. My wife joins the show in this hour. She often just pops in, which she just did right now.
Just bursting in on you. You've crashing your party.
Crashed in.
What'd you call it? Happy hour?
Every regular American guy knows what that's like.
What's that supposed to mean?
I'm just trying to say you're having some alone time.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden you got kids or wife. And
you're having your alone time while doing your radio show with hundreds of thousands of people listening. Okay.
Hey, but you know what?
Forgive me for barging in your intimate moment.
I'm not just in here having alone time.
Uh-huh.
You might notice there's some dumbbells on the floor. I'm getting a workout in.
I see that.
In the commercial breaks.
Yeah, those are pretty hefty looking.
Yeah, there's some impressive nice dumbbells. I'm doing a lot of different things with them.
Between you working out during the radio show and Adriana, what is she, crocheting now? Is that what I saw a picture of? Something she crocheted?
Yeah.
Or knit? What's the difference?
Crocheting is one hook and knitting is two more like pointy and they're like more round and long.
Okay.
Like
so which one are you doing?
Crocheting.
She's crocheting.
Crocheting.
I feel like crocheting is easier than knitting.
Uh-huh.
I was going to say crocheting is something Mildred does and Irma or Edna knits.
I don't know about that. What inspired you to take up crocheting?
I've actually been crocheting since I was in like third grade.
Come on.
No, but I haven't actually like that. That's when I learned how to do it. Uh-huh. But I haven't actually picked up a project in years and years and years.
Oh, and now you have two little baby nephews to
exactly
crochet for.
She's gonna make us a scarf or something. I was gonna say
it's
blanket.
It's like 87 degrees outside. Let's not talk about scarves.
I was gonna say blanket, but then I thought, you know, don't be greedy. You know. How long could that take her? You know what I mean?
That's cool.
All right. This show's not turned into crochet hour.
Oh, okay? Sorry.
It's a happy hour.
Oh.
This isn't put people to sleep talking crochet
okay.
hour.
Sorry, I'll pick it up.
All right, but since you joined the show,
yeah?
You have to answer the question.
What?
All right. I was going to work out, but instead, ...
I ate a cheeseburger. Simple answer.
Really?
That happens more often than I would care to admit.
You were on your way to working out today,
yeah.
And then you had a cheeseburger. I had a Rice Krispie treat.
Oh.
I was going to work out. I had the gym clothes on and everything. I was all geared up. And then I got derailed by the snap, crackle, pop and marshmallow goodness of a Rice Krispie treat. I think the Rice Krispie treat's underrated, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. Especially the homemade ones. I meant to pick up more Rice Krispies yesterday at the store, like the box of cereal, to make more treats.
I've been doing something on the weekends that can trump the crocheting. Alabama Adriana and Judah, you're not going to believe this, but I've been making donuts, homemade donuts, on the weekends.
How's that going?
It's going really well. Anna? Take it over.
Yeah, impressive. Like with the, colored frosting and everything.
I can do a nice glazed donut. I can do a nice maple. I can get a bear claw going next weekend, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Next steps. It was just funny because, you know, before I go to the store now, since I'm like the designated food shopper, I always ask everybody in the family, hey, do you need anything? Do you need anything? Are you out of deodorant or whatever? And John's request for my grocery store trip was sprinkles and granulated sugar. Just like,
We all have our needs right now. I want to talk college football. I promise I'm going to talk some college football. I want to bring up something, though, that happened the other day.
Okay.
We went into a store. You had said, okay, let's back up even further. You're a big believer that there's a meat shortage going on.
Well, I'm just reading the reports. I'm not saying it's going on right now, but if you read the reports and you believe the credible news sources, there have been enough outbreaks at processing plants that are delaying the processing of meat.
So you're kind
nationwide.
Of a truther on the meat subject.
Truther.
Right?
I'm just a little concerned because what I've read is that like the meat that we're currently buying in the stores now is just what they've had in stock with the supply, and that the real shortage is going to come here in the next few months.
Yeah, we all know they freeze stuff. I've been in meat lockers where the meat's frozen and stuff. We see it. I mean, it's like -5 degrees. I just didn't know, like, until now the degree, like, if we're still eating meat that was from, like, before coronavirus derailed the NBA season.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know it was that far backlogged. And by the way, Wendy's not serving the beef anymore, saying, hey, we're out of beef.
Mm-hmm.
Does that kind of make you believe that Wendy's has the best burgers now?
I suppose. I don't know.
You had a cheeseburger today.
It's fresh, right?
Yeah.
I didn't say that happened today. I'm saying, like, as a general rule, often if I'm not going to work out, I don't even go halfway. I just go to the other extreme and pick up, like, some fat, like, cholesterol and calorie filled.
Might as well get a chimichanga. You were gonna do crunches, got a chimmy instead.
Totally.
All right, so the bottom line being, you mentioned to me the other night.
Yeah.
There's a meat shortage.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to buy a freezer. Okay, she wants a standalone freezer, guys. She wants one of these freezers just to put meat in. And she says, she's looking online, she's looking at Amazon, she's looking at Walmart, she's going online, all these different places. And I kind of did what a lot of spouses do in that I kind of did a delay of game tactic where I just kind of said, let's talk about that later, hoping that she would never bring it up again. Because I thought, you know what, if we don't have to buy a freezer, that's one less thing that we got to find a place for in the garage and all this drama. So sure enough, the very next day,
mm-hmm.
I'm running errands. She says, can I go with you? And we happen to be by this appliance store that carries stuff like refrigerators and freezers. And she says, let's go in. I said, what do you want to do? What do you need? And she says, I need a freezer. She brings it up again. So at this point, after playing like delay of game, I went into full like, maybe there's not going to be a freezer available mode. We walk in.
And sure enough,
there's one standalone freezer left.
There it is. And pretty sure it was one that like somebody had brought back to the store because, you know, when they tape it back up and like it doesn't.
It was.
You know.
The bottom line being that the minute I saw that freezer, I knew I was hosed. And the other thing being, I didn't know what the freezer cost because I didn't even look at the price, but I knew we were leaving with the freezer.
Wow.
And I knew it. Like
I looked at
it
the
was.
Price.
It was a smaller freezer. It wasn't
it is.
Like
it's
just
not
like,
one of those gargantuan.
All right, but it's about the size of like.
It's 5 cubic feet.
5 cubic feet.
For people who know freezers.
So it's a small freezer, you know. And I went to go get some kind of pallet mover or cart so we could get this freezer out to the vehicle and take it home. I had not anticipated bringing a freezer home. I come back. And I expect to see you, like, draped over the freezer.
Claiming it.
And I realized, as I put it on, there was no price tag on it. There was no price on the thing. And so we got it up to the register, and I was like, this is going to be... I thought it was going to be, like, $300.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It was under $200, which was a relief to me. I felt like a winner. It was a win for me.
I was looking it up on Consumer Reports to see if it was going to last more than, like, 7 minutes.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Say, can I have the other freezer? There was no other freezers. This was it.
Well, I'm not the only one with this idea.
Okay, so the bottom line being... And guys, you'll relate to this. We leave, we put the freezer in the vehicle, we come home. All I said to you was, well, you got your freezer, didn't you? And she got a big smile on her face. You were very happy with that freezer.
It's, I don't know, this whole coronavirus is doing weird stuff to me, I think.
Alabama Adriana's crocheting.
Yeah, see?
Talk about you.
Weird.
Yeah, what do you mean it's doing weird stuff to you?
No, it's, I'm not paranoid. I'm not, you know, I'm pretty easy go lucky when it comes to most things, but just kind of the thought, I guess I've succumbed at least in part to the idea that, oh, you know, what if there is a shortage? Maybe we should stock up a little bit. And then I'm now researching, you know, what's the best way to like obtain meat?
But is it
meat?
Maybe it's possible.
Yeah.
That much meat isn't good for us. Like, maybe the silver lining is we should be eating more plant-based food.
That's true.
All right, not to sound like I'm living in Oregon or anything, but...
That stuff's running short, too. Like, Beyond Meat and... Like, remember, we've talked about it. We tried to be vegan. It lasted, like, a week, and you didn't even know
no,
we were trying.
I didn't know what was going on. This was...
Yeah, it was our vegan experiment to which you were a party and wasn't aware of it.
Bottom line being, I like meat as much as the next person.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just wondering, like, do we need another freezer filled with... Now what are we going to do? Now we're going to order meat from one of these companies that's wholesaling it? Or
that's what I'm trying to research. I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, my mom is a big fan of... Like, she lives rural, And so she always puts in her order for like half a lamb or something. Like she gets
it. I did that. I raised pigs. We raised steer. We raised lambs.
So
I know that game.
Why are you poo-pooing that?
I'm just saying you don't have to do that. That's not like maybe one of these meat brokers that is used to supplying restaurants is hurting. We should reach out to them and be like, hey, you're having a hard time moving your product. Mm-hmm. We're here for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Well.
We got a whole 5 cubic feet to fill. Do you have like an eighth of a lamb? You know?
Oh, dear.
That's where we are. All right. Coming up, we'll talk about Elijah Molden, who got a preseason honor.
Oh, cool.
We'll talk about that coming up. Plus, I'm sure you're going to tell a story about the Molden family.
The who?
You Molden.
Oh, the Moldens, yeah.
You've seen Alex Molden's wife and kids driving around in the morning, dropping off nine. When you got 9 kids, getting those kids to school is an ordeal.
She is a taxi driver with a giant cargo.
I wonder how that's going for homeschooling. You know what? Yeah. We should get Alex Molden on the show.
We should.
Get him on the show. Like, that would be an interesting conversation. Alex Molden told me, because I told him I had 3 daughters.
Uh-huh.
He says, 3 is the same as 9. I was like, what? But you know what? I can see if your kids are older, because then they help out, you know, when they become teenagers.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced
Truth. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.